Okay, we're beginning here again with the last lines on Kuf Samach Aleph Amud Bet. I'm Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, I'm Rav Yochanan. Kol HaMechakim, Kulam Tzrichim Shichtov, V'dein Kiyum Eihon. That's what we discussed yesterday, that at the end of the document, you have to validate any changes, any erasures that were done inside the document. And then the next line was, V'tzarich Shiachzor Min Yano Shel Shtar V'Shita Achrona. That you have to repeat, in the last line of the shtar, you have to repeat the headlines or main topics that were in the shtar. My time, what's the reason that you have to do such? Amrav Amram, lefisha ein lemeidim mishita achrona. Because we don't learn anything from the last line in the shtar. So now, there are two steps here. One step is that there's a requirement to repeat in the last line of the shtar materials or information that was found inside the shtar. And then, number two is, the result of that is that we don't learn anything from the last line of the shtar. Whatever is written in that last line is meaningless. So why would you do such? The Rishbam says over here, at the top of Rishbam, Kuf Samach Bet Amud Aleph, Mipnei she'ein adim yicholim lekarev chatimatam kol kach besamuch besof hashtar. Our problem is that when the adim come to sign on the shtar, they can never get it right up against the bottom of the shtar. Ameinichem revach ben hashtar lechamitimatam. They're always going to leave some sort of space, some sort of emptiness between the end of the shtar and their signatures. There's enough room in there that you could add in a couple more words, a line to the shtar. So what the Chazal did was they instituted that you have to repeat in the last line of the shtar materials that are already found, information that's already found in the shtar. So it'll be clear that there's nothing there that is necessary for the shtar, nothing essential to the agreement between them. This could really be for two reasons that the Rishbam explains over here, which is that the spacing that you leave between the shtar and the edim can result in one of two outcomes. One is which is that you could slice off the top of the shtar, and then with that empty space and the signatures of the edim, you could write whatever you'd like. You could add a whole new shtar in there. That's number one. Number two is the fact that even if you leave everything intact, that space can be utilized by the individual to write whatever they want or add in some sort of condition or some sort of information to the shtar that wasn't there before. So in order to prevent that, Chazal made it that we would repeat in the last line of the shtar information that was said before. Again, here you have two purposes. One is, that will indicate that we're at the end of the shtar. When you're repeating information, that's already indicative of we're closing out the shtar. So things that are added after that would be considered to be additions or ziyuf or a forgery. Also, so that if there is a blank line left and then somebody fills it in, we'll ignore it because we don't learn anything from the last line of the shtar. So those are the reasons behind this type of takana. Now, you start to run into issues, for instance, where we have, like Balei Tosafot bring it, it's the bottom Balei Tosafot on Kuf Samach Aleph Amud Bet, and he says here, Vim Tomar, Imbar Shtar Lefaneinu. All of a sudden we see a shtar, Shechatimat Eidim Rechoka Min Shtar Shita Achat. There's a gap of one line between the end of the shtar and the Eidim. V'lo Yechziru Min Yano Shel Shtar B'Shita Achrona. And they did not repeat the last line of the shtar, Yehei Kasher. It should be kasher to the mai ika the mechash. What are we going to worry about over here? What issue do you have? You see the blank line, the empty space. You see the edim. So what are you going to be choshesh? That originally they left two lines empty, and then they filled in one line with something that changed the nature of the agreement. It says v'la aleka lemechash. That you don't have to worry about. Shinichu shtei shitim chalak. You don't have to worry about the fact that they originally left two blanks blank, and now there's only one line left because they changed something. So he says, "Ishlamar devaday kein hushu kasher." Says it's for sure kasher a shtar like this. And if you do believe it's kasher, then you'd have the secondary question: what is considered to be the shita achrona? Now, is it the blank line that becomes the shita achrona, or is it the last written line in the shtar that becomes the shita achrona? And then the application of ein lemidim mishita achrona, did that apply to the blank line, or is that applied to the last written line of the shtar? So if you say it's kasher, you have to then answer that secondary question. Because the problem is that the Gemara in Gittin thinks that that shtar is pasul. So Tosfot works back and forth, and in the end he says that he thinks it must be pasul, Miu mistaber de pasul gzeira atu heichad lo hirchik shita achat. There is a gzeira because of even when you don't leave one line blank. Tolo mishtamet lefugi behen elo ben hirchiku lo hirchiku beinan chazarat ashtar. So because we don't really differentiate between whether there's a gap or there isn't a gap there, you always have to repeat that last line of the shtar. So what the Tosafot is dealing with in the end is, if the whole repetition of the last line of the shtar is a preventative measure, then in a situation where you have a shtar that has a blank between the end of the shtar and the edim, then in essence you don't need that repetition of the shtar, because you've simulated whatever would have been there. When you fill in that last line and fill in the blank space, you see the blank space, it's there. There's still a blank space left. We would worry in the case where you filled in all the way to the end, it wasn't repeated, and then you have the edim signed, then you could worry about the fact that he filled something into that empty space. But here the empty space is still there. So what is there to worry about? So at first, Balei Tosafot say, logically, there's nothing to worry about, it should be kosher. But then he backs away from that and says that no, the Takanat Chachamim is a shtar must be written in this way. Which is, you must repeat the last line of the shtar. And given the fact that you have to repeat the last line of the shtar, it'll be not be kosher if it's missing. Even though you have the blank space, which is what that last line is going to fill in, is that blank space. Nevertheless, the shtar is pasul, because this is the institution of the Chachamim, and we don't want to differentiate. Because if you start differentiating, people will make the mistakes that are going to lead to forgeries. We want to eliminate this problem of forgeries. We want to eliminate this problem of people cheating on shtarot. You have to make it that the gzera, the takanat chachamim, is binding no matter what the circumstance is. Because if you start to be chuker and say, oh, in this case it applies, in this case it doesn't apply, people will get confused, and then you'll end up with situations with blank spaces that get filled in with the wrong information. Both the Rashbam over here and the Balei Tosafot say the same thing, and we actually mentioned it in yesterday's daf because they said the same thing there as well, which is that our practice at the end of the shtar to write a kol sharir vikayam did not exist in their day. It's a practice that came in later. Only Rav Huna, out of all the opinions that we saw here, mentions the idea of sharir vikayam. Rav Yirmiyahu of Abba does not mention it at all, and the Balei Tosafot and the Rashbam noted that if there was sharir vikayam, none of the questions or none of the issues we asked yesterday on Rav Yirmiyahu of Abba would be relevant, and therefore it's clear that they did not say sharir vikayam. In a get pashut, they did not write sharir v'kayam. Only a get mikushar, according to Rav Huna, did they write sharir v'kayam. And once again here, the Rishbam and the Balei Tosafot emphasize that fact, that all of this is, ubshein katu b'shtar sharir v'kayam mayri. So the Rishbam says, kein nire be'enai tama davar upeyusho v'ikar. Says, that's what I think is going on over here. Had you had sharir v'kayam, none of this would be relevant. Because our fear is that you're going to add in information at the end. Our fear is that you're going to change the meaning of the shtar when there's empty space there. Once you have a sharir v'kayam, that's the end of the shtar. You can't write anything afterwards. The shtar ended. Doesn't matter how much space you leave, the shtar ended and you have edim that signed on it, even if there's a gap between them. From the Rashbam, it would sound like, once you have sharir v'kayam, none of the takanot chachamim of here apply. And the Balei Tosafot say even more explicitly, "B'yamehem lo yuktuvim sharir v'kayam b'shutim shalem." It's clear that they did not write sharir v'kayam. But if there was a sharir v'kayam, you can't be mezayef the shtar, and you would be able to learn mishita achrona. You could learn from the last line of the shtar, because you no longer have to put in the last line of the shtar as a buffer to stop people from cheating or forging the shtar. And then he asks the ish l'tma. The end of the shtar, as you get towards the end of the shtar, we write v'kinyan amine, and this kinyan is effective through this. And then right after that, they write in the last line of the shtar the validation of all the erasures that took place in the shtar. So we are doing exactly the opposite of what the Gemara says over here. The Gemara says we don't learn anything for the last line. And we instead write in the last line the most important information. Here's the validation of all the erasures in the shtar. How could it be? There's no bigger piece of information that's essential to the shtar than that information. Since the shtar would have been fine if you didn't write sharir v'kayam, it's really risky to say that you could put this information in the last line of the shtar. Shepamim lo yichtov. Sometimes you won't write sharir v'kayam, and the shtar is fine without sharir v'kayam. Yitchila v'sharir kayam v'yavo zev yimchok ma sheyirtze. It's got to erase whatever he wants in the shtar. V'yagia v'yikayam ha-machak b'sof. And then at the end of the shtar, in the empty space, he'll write in whatever he wants to validate those erasures. Yichtov sharir v'kayam. And then afterwards, he'll end in sharir v'kayam. You'll end up with a terrible situation like that. V'yesh lomar. So here's the first concession of Tosfot. Since we now, in every shtar, write sharir v'kayam, if you don't write it, it's pasul. It's not necessary to write sharir v'kayam. Nowhere in the Gemara do you find that. There's no such halacha. It says, but because the practice came to be that everybody writes sharir v'kayam, at this point, if you don't write it, it now becomes problematic in the shtar. Afilu kashein bo machak. Even if there's no erasures in the shtar. So now we dealt with the problem of forgeries, which is that you have to write sharir v'kayam, and that explains why we're writing things in the last line that are essential to the shtar. So that's why you can write the mechakim, you can do all of these things at the end of the shtar, because we write sharir v'kayam, which prevents any of these problems. It says, v'ad kotvim kinyon aminei. So then, if sharir v'kayam becomes the replacement for the repetition of the last line of the shtar, then when we write kinyan aminei at the end of the shtar, which is a repetition of what happened before, it's saying that this kinyan will effectively bring into force or effectuate that which is written in the contract. Lo avi chazarat ha-shtar. That is not a repetition of the information above. Alafisha dain eduta kinyanu. It is testifying about the kinyan itself. I mean that the shtar speaks about the transaction, and kinyan aminei is speaking about the kinyan that effectuated that which was in the shtar. So he says it's an essential part of the shtar, not a repetition. The reason the Balei Tosafot wants to say that is because then it jumps to Gitin. It says, Lufai Perush, Lo Tzarich Hazaret Hashtar. Based on that explanation that kinyan aminei is an essential part of the shtar, in our day you do not need to repeat any information at the end of the shtar, because we write sharir v'kayam, and that takes care of all these issues. Imkain, hadekatvinim begitin, that which we write by a get. Davi leichi minai sefer tiruchin v'get piturim, that you write that language, that this will be a bill of divorce and a document of release. Lo havya mishum chazarat ashtar. We don't write that at the end of the shtar because we have to repeat it. The lo tzorech l'michtav chazara. Kevin dechvin and sharir v'kayam. Since we write in contract sharir v'kayam, we'll be gitin kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. That's the end of the get. Says kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. So you always know the get ends there. Havi makom sharir v'kayam. L'kach nira shalikah get anu kotvim v'dein. We write this for the essential part of the get. V'en anu tzrichim chazara mishum tam shepirashti. Yecholim lichtiv v'dein b'shita achrona kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. Havi makom sharir v'kayam. And therefore you can write v'dein, even though it's an essential part of the shtar on the last line of the document, because the get always ends with Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, and there's no problem of ziyuf. And then here's the big, big question. V'yesh teima, lama shinu ad kadmonim lichtov sharir v'kayam, l'umod m'shita achrona ul'kayim mechakim achar kinyan aminei, k'evin shachmei ha-gemar lo yukotvim sharir v'kayam. Says, why did it change? The Gemara is explicit that you're not allowed to learn from the shita achrona. The Gemara never had the practice of writing sharir v'kayam. All of a sudden, we introduced this new practice. Chadashim ikarov ba'u, and then they said, oh yeah, we'll put in sharir v'kayam, and now we'll start learning from the last line in the contract. Why was there a change from the time of the Gemara? And by the way, the practice is already extant in the time of the Gonim. So it's ready in the time of the Gonim. They've changed dramatically from what the Gemara says. Where did this practice come from? Or where, who gave permission to change that which the Gemara says? It says, V'yesh lomar, shechashashu. This was the chashash. V'pamim, sheit'ua de'idim, she'ing bikiyim. De'idim are not so careful or don't know what they're doing. V'yachiku shnei shitim. And they're not going to leave one line, they're going to leave two lines, which we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, presents a serious issue. V'afilo ye adam chatzuf lasot shtar chadash. So even though, again, we spoke about the two chashashot, when you leave a lot of space there, the two chashashot are either cuts off the top document, writes a totally new document. Says, all right, people are not going to be so mechutzav to write a new document, because the edim will remember generally what they signed to. They may not remember every detail, but they'll generally remember, and they'll know that that wasn't what they signed to. Mikomakom, lo yidag melosif shnei shitim, v'amdu melo yuna, and then he'll add in two lines, And from the first line will be part of the contract and will change it. And then the last line, you won't learn anything because they left over two lines. Or in essence, what he says is, it's too risky. The way that the Gemara set it up, or the solution of the Gemara, still leaves open possibilities of problems. And that is because Edim normally sign pretty close to the bottom of the shtar, but they do leave spaces. For instance, in a situation where one aide signs and he wants to leave space for someone else to sign. So then he leaves a gap, the next guy comes along and signs below him instead of above him. Now all of a sudden you have a gap of two lines. He says that there is this real risk that you could end up with these problems, or Edim just don't know. And they just sign below or two lines away from the bottom of the contract, thinking that's fine, they just need to sign the bottom of the paper. So all of these issues led to the change because the solution of the Gemara wasn't foolproof. The solution of the Gemara still had holes in the solution, and therefore they came up with this new solution of Sharir V'Kayam, which deals with everything. Which is once you put in Sharir V'Kayam, now you don't have to worry about all these things because that closes out the shtar. And anything that's erased around that point, we already saw from Rabbi Yochanan, would pasul, make the shtar pasul. Because then we know that you're playing around with the Sharir V'Kayam, and that we won't allow to go through. So that's why we change the dynamic. So that's how he explains it. But then he says, V'sheh sha'al ri the Rabbeinu Tam. So now the Re asked the Rabbeinu Tam, Al kiyum mechakim she'anu kotvim b'shita achrona. The question the Bali Tosvot dealt with before, how do we allow for the validation of erasures in the last line of the shtar? V'yishiv kamo she'pirashti, she'anu sumchim ha'sharir v'kayam. And he answered the same way that I answered before, which is that we rely on sharir v'kayam. That's what the Bali Tosvot said. Says Vakasha Pab Peirush Meshum Sharir Vekiyam Gadad Moshe Yisrael Shugul Echtov Lo Kadvin Echazerat Hashtar Halo Gam Hema Yu Kodvim Gadad Moshe Yisrael. So now he enters in a problem, which is yes, they did not have Sharir Vekiyam in their documents that we know from the Gemaras that we just read in the last 2 days, but they did have Gadad Moshe Yisrael at the end of their get. And that means that they did have a final or closure to their get. Yet the Gezeira, the Takana, still applied to Gitin, even though they had Gadad Moshe Yisrael. So that really opens up a problem because we're saying, oh, our change in what we do obviates the need for repeating at the last line or not learning from the last line. All of a sudden we find out that they also did Kedat Moshe Yisrael at the end of their Gitin and they still had this Takana. So now that really opens up a problem. And he says, V'yesh lomar, the answer is, Shemitchila yikotvim Kedat Moshe Yisrael be'emtza get. So when they wrote Kedat Moshe Yisrael, they didn't write at the end of the get like we do, but rather they wrote it in the middle of the get. Wherever it was relevant to write it, they wrote it. But it wasn't always the final words of the get. We made it, or we instituted it to be the final words of the get. That's what changed. The dynamic that changed in our time is they made it like Sharir V'Kayam. They made Kedat Moshe Yisrael work the same way as Sharir V'Kayam, which is it's always at the end of the get. Now, he says, then, Achar Petirato Rabbeinu Tam. It's a very interesting story, just historically. After Rabbeinu Tam passed away, the Re found some halachot of the Rabbeinu Tam. And in those halachot, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that we should not write or validate the erasures in the last line of the get or in the last line of the document because of all the issues that we just raised, that the Gemara says, Ein li medim mishita achrona. So as opposed to what the Rabbeinu Tam told the Re in his lifetime, which is that the whole answer that we just gave with Sharir V'Kayam with that Moshe Yisrael obviates the need to worry about the last line. You can write whatever you want there, even important information. They re-found in the notes of the Rabbeinu Tam after he had passed away that the Rabbeinu Tam objected to that. And he didn't want you to write important information in the last line. So now that all of a sudden raises a problem. Because then what are we doing? We're doing going against what the Rabbeinu Tam says over here. Even though in his lifetime he paskin that it was fine or that it was okay. Bekasha the Reed, Ahad Perish Perish Rabbeinu Tam. So he said the Reed comes up with a problem with that which the Rabbeinu Tam writes. And he says, therefore he favors what the Rabbeinu Tam said originally. Or in essence, maybe along the lines of what you're saying is that he relented or retracted his statement that he had written, but orally had told the Reed that it's okay. And therefore, b'chein nirah the Reed min hagul achtov sharir v'kayam, since we write sharir v'kayam in our shtarot, or dat Moshe Yisrael in our gitin, we learn from shita achrona. So therefore, it's fine. Komakom nidzhan olamidim shita achrona, hirchik shnei shitim pasul. If you leave over more than that space, you leave over two blank lines, the shtar is pasul, the risk then is not that you're going to add on to the document. We've eliminated that risk because you wrote Sharir V'Kayam or you wrote Kedat Moshe Yisrael. What's the risk now? That you slice off the top of the document and then you write a new shtar with the edim that are there. Therefore, we still have the problem that if you leave too much blank space, that we won't accept the shtar. So here, even though we are willing to learn from the last line, Shita Achronah, because of Sharia B'Kayam HaKor, because of Dat Moshe Yisrael, you still have the Gemara's problem of too much blank space. If you leave too much blank space, that opens up the possibility of entering a whole new shtar there and slicing off the top, and therefore that problem will still exist in our day if they leave too much gapping between the end of the shtar and where the Edim signed, and so that problem or that issue will remain in place. As the Rashbam notes over here, that's obviously in a case where Sharir V'Kayam is not in the document, but more importantly, he says that if we have a document that has two lines blank in it, and the lines are still blank, nevertheless, the Shtar is Pasul, because of the fact that you didn't do Ketikun Rabbanan, you didn't follow the Takanat Rabbanan, and therefore the Shtar is Pasul, and it's Milve Alpeh Damya, it becomes like an oral loan, and the document is Pasul, Pasul to the point where it won't evidence in terms of being a documented loan, but it still be a loan, Bialpeh. There are those, and we find in other places as well, when you have this issue of Pasul, we saw that with the Bali Tosfot before, the Pasul might be Pasul de Gamrei. And there's some Rishonim who want to say here that if you don't follow the Takanat or the protocols of the Chachamim, the Shtar is complete Pasul, it's not even Kamil Bialpeh Damyo. Although the Ravid does have the opposite view, which is, if the Edim come into Beit Din and say, we signed on it, and there were two blank spaces on it, that the Shtar is a Kosher Shtar, completely, and you could use that shtar. But he is in the minority over here, where most Rishonim believe, like the Rashbam, that the shtar is pasul, but it's kamil v'alpeh. And again, there are even Rishonim who believe that it is pasul de gamrei. And then the Rish says something interesting. He says, "Ri perish shema bavura torach hu gulu lichtov shirir v'kayam." Says, maybe in the end, why is it that they changed the practice from the time of the Gemara to our time? But at first he said it was because the Gemara solution didn't solve all the problems. There were still problems that were arising. So, okay, that's maybe one. But he says, maybe the real answer is that it's just too much trouble. What happens when you repeat that which you wrote in the shtar? But all of a sudden there was a mistake in what you wrote in that last line of the shtar. So now you have to erase in it. You can't make it the last line because now you just erased in that line and now you have to add in another line. So what's going to end up happening is that anytime there's a mistake in the shtar in the last line, you're going to have to write it again. You make another mistake and erase it, you're going to have to write it again. And so the Re says that they came up with this solution of Shavir B'Kayam to eliminate that problem, which is that if you have to repeat the last line of the shtar, you open up the possibility of mistakes, and those mistakes then lead to have to repeat it again or write it again. Shavir B'Kayam was just a simpler way to deal with the issue and close out the shtar. The truth is, if you make a mistake in Sharir V'Kayam, you're going to have that problem. But that's a lot less. If you're repeating the whole content of the shtar in that last line, more chances of mistake. Sharir V'Kayam is simple. Kedat Moshe Yisrael, very simple. Everybody knows that it's there. You're less likely to make a mistake. There's nothing particular about it. It doesn't have content of the shtar. It's just words that you're going to put in. And for that reason, he thinks that maybe the practice switched in order to obviate the need to repeat or to run into that problem of erasure that takes place at the last lines. So this made it simpler. And that's the simplification was what they're after when they introduced the Sharir V'Kayam. And then he writes, what happens if in the last line of the shtar we have something that is to the detriment of the holder of the shtar, not to his benefit? Our whole fear here is that there's going to be ziyuf, is that the holder of the shtar will fill in information that's to his benefit. But if there's information that's his detriment, what are we worried about? And therefore he says over here, Nihi she'en lemeidim ishita achronah zchut lebal ashtar, chobata mi'u lemeidim. Something that's to his detriment, we learn, shebechobato en lechushim mizuyaf. If it's something negative, what are you worried about? Because he's the one holding the shtar, and what is he going to do? He's going to put something into his detriment? Doesn't make sense. Therefore we would read it. Even in time of the Gemara, it would be valid. That's the view of the Balei Tosafot. You can obviously understand what other Rishonim are going to disagree with that, which is that once Chazal put in place that you don't learn anything from the Shita Achronah, it's irrespective of whether it's good or bad, or to the benefit or detriment of the party holding the shtar, you don't learn from it, period. Because that's the whole point of the repetition, is to end the shtar. And you don't want to open up the possibility that sometimes we do learn, sometimes we don't. But the Balei Tosafot do make that distinction, that if it's something negative, we would accept it. If it's something positive, that's where you have the problem. That's where this whole issue of the Gemara comes up. So this Balei Tosafot is very important for our practices today, what we do in Shtarot, and why our practice is differentiated from that which the Gemara did because of this Sharir V'Kayam Dat Moshe Yisrael. And because of that, we then add in important information or even essential information in the last line of the Shtar, which is validating all the erasures that took place in the shtar beforehand. The Bayit Tosfot speak about that. You can either scratch across, putting in lines, or putting inking across it. The problem is with the signing of the Edim, you have a problem, which is that if they have a blank space between the shtar and the Edim, the Bayit Tosfot say if you do it, tiyuta, if you do lines and scratch across, people are going to think that the Edim signed on that, and that it's a totally invalid shtar. That you have a risk when you start doing that in between the shtar and the Edim, that either it goes over where the Edim are, or it looks like the Edim signed on a place that was scratched out, and the shtar is pasul because somebody scratched it out, and they signed on a scratched out area, which makes it look like something was wrong, or they signed in a proper area that was improper. Or that the Edim themselves are signing to the fact that there are these etchings over here, that there's nothing there. It's not clear that the Edim are signing on the shtar then, maybe they're signing on the etching that was there. The Bayit Tosafot earlier, and I mentioned this before, asks your question, which is, why don't we do these? Why don't we blank out? Why don't we ink over certain areas and scratch them out? And he's trying to deal with the balance between doing that and when they don't do it and how we just deal with these problems. So over here, in your question where the space between the shtar and the Edim, he didn't like that solution because the risk that that would invalidate the Edim below. Because if you scratch, you might scratch over the Edim or scratch, and then the Edim sign on the scratching, make it look like that it was a shtar pasul, the Edim signed somewhere that it shouldn't have been signed. So because of that risk, they came to the solution of Sharir V'Kayam HaKudat Moshe V'Yisrael, which is a simpler solution to the problem. So now the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Amman, Menalach Ha. How do you know that that's the case? How do you know that we don't learn from the last line of the shtar, number one? And number two is, how do you know that you have to repeat on the last line of the shtar the information that was important? Amalei, so he says, Titania of a brighter, Yechikate Edim Shnei Shittim Inaktav, Pasul. Shitachat kasher. If the Edim are two lines away, then it's pasul. If it's one line away, they are kasher. Maishna sheit shnei shitim. Why is it any different? Why do we care if there's gapping of two lines or a gapping of one line? If you have the same problem, which is someone could fill in information that would then alter the nature of the shtar. So why is there a difference between two lines and one line? It says maishna sheit shitim dilma mizayif bekotav shitachat bekotav. We're worried about the fact that he will forge something, write something there, and cause a problem with the shtar. Shidachat, nami mizayif ikotav. What's any different? There's a blank line there. You could also write something there and ruin the shtar, change the nature of the shtar. Alav shma mino. What do you learn from this? Ein limidim mishitachrona. Where you learn from it is that the difference in the bright is that you don't learn from the last line. So if you have one line that's blank, you don't have a problem anymore, because no matter what he fills in there, it'll make no difference. We're not going to learn from it. Two lines, then you run into a problem, because then on the first line you could write something that's essential, and the second line we'll ignore. So he says, Shmamina, from the Braita it seems obvious that there's a difference between one line and two lines. That difference must be that we don't learn anything from the last line of a shtar. So he's midayek out of that distinction that the Braita makes to the din that Rav Amram, the din that Rav Amram says, which is we don't learn from the last line of a shtar, because of this whole problem of ziyuf, and that ziyuf is protected by having us not learn anything from the last line. See, Bailu, so can I answer your question? Shito mechsamai. What happens if it is a line and a half? So here, it's not clear what the Gemara is asking. The Bailu Tosafot bring two speculations as to what it means, but most of the Rishonim learn, like simply, we would have thought, which is, we asked about a gap of one line. We said, fine. Two lines, problematic. A line and a half, what's the story? It's in between a line and two lines, what's the story there? The question really relates to the font size, which is going to come into the play in the Gemara tomorrow. But what, if you write in a certain font size, then you can see that the gapping is the size of the font. So you have two lines, you have gapping that's the size of two fonts, and say tomorrow that's fonts plus the space between the lines. Or if you have one line, you have a gapping of one line of font. If you have one and a half, the question is, if he shrinks the font a little bit, at that point, can he make one and a half lines into two lines? Which is that you have font of a certain size, and then he gets down there and he changes the font to squeeze it in, and he's able to squeeze in two lines in the space of one and a half, and that's the nature of the Gemara's question. That's what most Rishonim believe. We think about in our day where you're talking about fonts that is printed on paper and stuff like that. When people have handwriting, they squeeze things in. They have to fit things in. They never get it the exact size. Sometimes they make it bigger, it's smaller. You look at a card that's handwritten. Their lines are not straight. The size of the font changes from line to line. Yeah, generally it's the same size, but it moves around a little bit. It's not of an exact nature by which you would say, oh, I can tell that he squeezed it in. Even with the sofer, it's not lines. There's no line paper. There's no exactness to the font. And then if you're printing something, you can see there's a difference. But here, there's a possibility that you can fill it in, and that's the nature of the question. The Baalei Tosafot bring two other possibilities, one of which they dismiss right away, which is, what is a line and a half? You ended the shtar halfway through a line, so there's a half a line left, and then one more line. Like the Stumar Ptucha in the Torah, so there you have a half line left, and then a whole blank line afterwards. There he says for sure it's Pasul, because then he could fill in at the end of that line, he could fill in whatever he wants, and it's clearly Pasul. He says then the other possibility is that they finish at the end of a line, they left a blank line, and then the Edim signed halfway across on the next line. So they, instead of aligning their signatures with the right margin, or the left margin, depending if you're writing in Hebrew or in English, since they didn't align with the margin, now you have a full line blank, plus a half a line before their signatures. Is that already risky? Because can you say then that the last line before the signatures will be the space that they put the sheet achrona, and then the line above that opens up the possibility that they could cheat on it, or can you slice the shtar now? Is that enough room to write something significant when you have a line and a half before the signatures? So that's the way the Baalei Tosafot asked the question, but again, in the context of the Gemara, the question seems to be along the lines of what we said at first, which is, you have one line and two lines, what's one and a half lines, what's the story there when you have that gapping, or that size between the signatures of the Edim and the bottom of the shtar? Tashma. So they're going to try to bring it from the Braita that we just brought. Yachik Eidim Shnei Shitim Pasul. So from the Braita, it says that if you have a distance of two, it's Pasul. Hashita Mechza Kasher. That would imply that one and a half is Kasher. When it says, wait a minute, Eima Seifa Shita Chat Kasher. The Seifa says that one line gapping is Kasher. Shita Chadu the Kasher. Hashita Mechza Pasul. That means one is Kasher, one and a half is Pasul. Elamah Alek Elamash Mimina. From this Braita, you can't learn anything because the Reish and the Seifa give you opposing views. One says one, one says two. And so in between, you don't know. And which one is Dafko? Is it the Reish that's Dafko or the Seifa that's Dafko? And it's unclear from the Braita. And therefore, you can't come to any conclusions from that. My Havi Allah. So what's the din with regards to one and a half? Tashma. Titania, we have a Braita. Hichik edayim shnei shittim in akatav pasul. If he leaves a gapping of two from the end of the shtar to the signatures of the Edim, it's clearly pasul. Pachot mikan kasher. Anything less than that is kasher. So here you have your answer, which is the threshold is two. Once you hit two, it's problematic. Less than two is not problematic. Now, hayu arba'a v'chamisha Edim chatumim al shtar. There are four or five Edim signed on the shtar. V'nimtza echad mehem karov o pasul. And we find that one of them is a karov or a pasul, titkayem edut bashar. Then you will validate the document with the remaining edim. So you have four or five edim, you only need two edim to validate a shtar. So out of those four or five edim, some of them are krovim, some of them are psulim, can you validate the shtar with the remaining kosher edim? The Braita says yes. Misayle the Chizkiyah. This is supportive of Chizkiyah's view, damar Chizkiyah. Milua, big krovim, kosher. If he filled it in with krovim, that is kasher. Meaning that if you have a gap between the end of the shtar and the signature of the edim, which is going to make the document pasul now, because you have too much space. So what does he do? He brings in krovim relatives and has them sign in the empty space to reduce the empty space. Because he says that is kasher. Now the Braita is saying something similar, which is it's supportive of Chizkiyah's position here, which is that even though there are edim psulim there, they don't ruin the shtar. The Edim Sulim just take up space. They don't ruin the shtar. And it says, Ve'altitama, and don't be surprised by such a din that when you have empty space, it's pasul. And when you fill it in with something pasul, it becomes kasher. That seems counterintuitive. You have empty space, which has no effect on the shtar, and then we say the shtar is pasul. Now you fill it in with Edim Sulim, which would clearly make the shtar pasul if they were the only Edim sign on here, and all of a sudden you say, kasher, no problem. It says, Altitama, Sheravir Suka. When it comes to a sukkah, if you have empty space in the sukkah, pasul b'shlosha. Three tfachim of empty space in a sukkah makes the sukkah into a sukkah psula. Schach pasul. On the other hand, if you have schach pasul, you can have arba'a, up to four tfachim of schach pasul, and the sukkah will still be kasher. So you see here that avir, empty space, is more problematic than pasul space, space that's filled in with schach pasul. So now, Baalei Tosafot would say that the case here has to be when you have a sukkah of 7x7, minimum size or minimum shiur of a sukkah, because then if you have a vir of 3 tefachim, it makes the sukkah a sukkah psula, because now you no longer have the minimum shiur of a sukkah. If you have schach pasul, then again, you have up to 4 tefachim, and then it'll remain a kosher sukkah. So that's the nature of the question, or it's a situation in which the space cuts the sukkah in half. The reason the Baal Tosfot is saying this is because in a large sukkah, and then you have empty space that runs through the middle of it, in that case, anything beyond the empty space will be pasul. But anything inside of the empty space, you have three walls and kosher tzchach. You're going to have a kosher sukkah. Well, you have one kosher sukkah and one sukkah psula, depending if you have four walls or three walls on that side. So that's why the Baal Tosfot say here, we must be talking about a sukkah that's a minimum shiur, where the avir causes a problem, or a situation in which you only have three walls. And then the cutting or the empty space breaks it down and leaves you with only two walls on each side, and that's where you're going to have a problem. So now, the bringing of the mashal from Sukkah is interesting, but the Baal Tosfot say they're not sure why the Gemara did this, because we have an example of this in a concept called Get Kereach. Get Kereach is found in the Masechet Gittin. It's a case where you have a Get Mikushar that has the folds in it or is stitched up, and the signatures on the Get Mikushar are less than the number of knots or the number of folds. We said before that each fold requires a signature on it. So now he finds the document, but the document doesn't have the number, requisite number of signatures. There are more folds than signatures. So over there, it's called a get kereach. It's called a bald get, because it's missing parts of what it needs. So over there, you can fill it in with krovim. You can fill it in with relatives. You can have relatives sign and fill in the empty spaces or the folds that need signatures on it. So again, it seems exactly like what we have over here, which is that you're allowed to fill in the empty spaces, the quote-unquote empty spaces, with relatives. So why doesn't the Gemara bring that as the example of where we have precedent for doing something like this, where you fill in something pasul and it helps you? If it was blank, it'd be pasul. So the Baal Tosafot say that would be a better answer, but Yesh Lamar, Da'i Gufa Takanta D'Rabbonani. Get Mikushar, and the fact that you have to sign it, and then the signature is being Rikovim is fine, is all Takana D'Rabbanan. V'igufa Tzricharaya Mimilta D'Oraita. And we want a precedent, Mina Torah, for such a thing. This goes to a fundamental understanding of Dinei D'Rabbanan, which is that Dinei D'Rabbanan in general, they will only pattern them after something that we find Midoraita. They look for a paradigm D'Oraita, and they create the Takana Chachamim. So if we can't find a model that exists, we're going to question whether such a concept should be okay. And that's what the Baal Tosfot is saying over here. Yes, you have this by Get Kereach, but that's also a Din D'Rabbanan. And then that Din D'Rabbanan needs a basis. What's the basis for saying that you can have psulim that make it better than when you have blank space? Had you had blank space, you would have been pasul. Now you fill it in with psulim, now it gets better? Where do you have such a precedent, D'Oraita? And that's what we bring in the case of Sukkah to teach us, that there is a concept, Midoraita, where something pasul will actually turn out to be better than empty space over there. And that's why they bring that as the example in order to prove the case. So now, as the Rabbeinu Chananel notes, that this latter case in the Braita that says, Hayuar Baba Chamishai Dim Chatumim Al Ashtar, that case is similar to the case of the Reisha in the Braita, which is that it's a case in which there were Shnei Shitim. There were two empty lines that were left over, and then you are machshir the document by adding in these two edim sulim to fill in the space so that there's no longer empty space, and in that way you're machshir the document. There are some rishonim based on that that want to say that it has to happen on the same day that the document itself was signed in order that the document be kasher on the same day that it was signed, because if the krovim or the space is only filled down the next day, that means that the document was pasul on the day that it was signed, and only it became kasher on the next day. And that means that the effective date of the shtar is actually a day after the dating in the shtar itself. Although other Rishonim disagree and say that it's not the case, because it's only a takanat d'Rabbanan, and say that the takanat d'Rabbanan, as soon as you remove that problem, the document is effective from the date that was in it, because you've eliminated the impediment, mid'Rabbanan, of having shnei shitim or blank lines there. So the Rabbeinu Chananel reads the Braita as referencing a case where there is empty space, and you're using the Edim Tzulim to fill in the empty space. And then you have the din of Chizkiyah, which we don't know where the Chizkiyah's din is said. So there are two ways to read Chizkiyah, and that's both brought by the Rabbeinu Chananel as well. The Rashbam quotes it. One possibility is that Chizkiyah is speaking about the similar case to the Braita, in a case when there's empty space there, and it's saying that if you fill it in with Krovim, it is Kasher. And in that way, the Braita is a direct support for that position of Chizkiyah. On the other hand, the Rashbam brings that the Rabbeinu Chananel also suggested that there was an alternate view, that Chizkiyah really was speaking about a get kereach, which we spoke about before, a get which has more folds than signatures on it. And it says there that if you fill it in with krovim, then that get becomes a kosher get. And so therefore, the Braita is supportive of Chizkiah's view by a get kereach. So even though Chizkiah said it's din by get kereach, the Braita, which is saying it by shterot in general, will give you the same din, which is that filling in with krovim is a valid way to deal with these takanot chachamim, or problems of psulim, midrabanan. Just like by a shtar, where editing two lines blank is problematic, it makes it pasul, and filling in krovim or psulim deals with that issue. So too, by a get kereach, the filling in of the krovim will deal with the problem midrabanan, or the psul midrabanan, that you don't have enough signatories to this get. And that's how the Braita will be approved to Chizkiah, although the Rashbam quotes from the Rabbeinu Chananel, and he himself believes that the better way to explain it is that Chizkiah is speaking about the same case as the Braita, and it has nothing to do with get kereach, but a shtar in general, and they're both saying that you can fill in these blank spaces with krovim in order to avoid the takanat chachamim that makes it pasul if you have those empty spaces. And you can see that in the Balei Tosafot that he says, "Damar Chizkiah melo b'krovim kasher, archik shnei shitim koi." It is speaking about a case like the Braita where you have two lines that are blank, and then the Balei Tosafot deal with the difference then in the language between Chizkiah where he says krovim kasher and the Braita that says krovim and psulim are ksherim. And he discusses as to whether there is a difference between the view of Chizkiah, where it only applies to Krovim, and the view of the Braita, where it applies to Psulim and Krovim. In the end, he wants to suggest that Chizkiah does agree with the Braita, and thinks that both Krovim and Psulim would be fine, but it has to do with the machloka that is found between Rabbi Akiva and Benanas in the Gemara in Gittin. Now, here you run into two problems. The two problems are, number one, the Girsa in our Gemara, that the Rashbam already addresses, that the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel was different, and that Girsa quotes Tosefta and Gittin, which is what we're quoting, the Braita we quote in our Gemara, so Tosefta and Gittin. Our Gemara has one word that is missing from the Tosefta, that makes a huge difference. The second question that all the Rishonim raise, it's in the Rashbam here, it's in the Balei Tosafot, is that we have the Gemara in Makot. The Gemara in Makot, which we'll get to soon enough, tells us that when you have a kat edim, you have a group of edim that come to testify together, if amongst that kat of edim there's one who's pasul, or there's one who's a karov, he ruins the entire kat edim. We don't just say throw him out and keep the kosher edim, we say that he ruins everybody who is involved in this testimony. So why over here all of a sudden we say you have a number of edim signed, some of them are psulim, some of them are krovim, and now all of a sudden we say, oh, just drop those out, and the other edim are fine. Why would there be a difference in the din here than the din in Makot? So there are two ways to answer that question, and the difference in the Girsa has to do with the two ways to answer the question. One way to answer the question is that there's a distinction between oral testimony and written testimony. When it comes to oral testimony, when they come together as a din, that's what the Gemara Makot is speaking about, and there it's pasul if they come together. Doesn't matter that you can eliminate him and kosher din, he ruins it for everybody. We have signatories to a document. Over there, we will separate out the signatures and say that there's a difference in din, and say that the psulim will drop, and the edim ksherim will uphold or will establish the shtar. So that's the chiluk that some make between whether it's in writing or baal peh. And then the Balei Tosafot take that distinction and enhance that distinction to show why there should be a difference between baal peh and in writing. Bishlamar, dehata mari beidim baal peh. Then when they come to testify as edim, then their edut is betela. Over here, when it comes to edim that are signing on a shtar, so then we say about shtar, you don't have to check why the edim are coming. Because once edim sign a shtar, it's as if they were already checked through beitin, that they came in to sign it. What the Balei Tosafot will point out is that we ask edim when they come to testify in court, why are you coming? Are you coming simply to tell us about an incident, tell us information, or are you coming to testify together with this group of edim? So then we will distinguish in the din between edim that declare themselves edim or part of a kat versus edim that simply say that we're coming to give information, to give over information to Beit Din. We're not coming in the official capacity as Edim. We saw it, we witnessed the event, but we're not coming in the capacity of Edim. We're just trying to give you information or help you out. In that case, there'll be a difference in the Din. If they come as Edim, they'll be Pasul and they'll ruin the Kat Edim. If they suddenly come as observers, then it'll be fine because they don't present themselves as Edim. He says that automatically happens in a shtar. Because a shtar, never do we check what the reason the edim signed. Because the edim are considered to be valid. Once they sign on a shtar, it's as if they went through Beit Din. So that's what he's saying. It's as if Beit Din asked them already, are you coming to sign because of kavod or to fill in the space? Or are you coming to sign to testify? So then we will assume that when they were krovim, they came to sign to fill in the space. And when they were not krovim, they came to testify. And so that we'll make that distinction in the signatures of the contract, even though we don't have them here, and even though we don't have that information, we'll make that assumption, because it's as if they went to Beit Din and had all this clarified. That's one way to deal with the problem and to separate between the cases. The other way to deal with it is the girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is the Rabbeinu Chananel brings the girsa from Gitin, and over there he says that, it's at the Rashbam at the top of the Amud, Hachi Garcina Beperish Rabbeinu Chananel, Hayu Arba'a Chomishaydim Chatumim Al Ashtar, Benimtza, or Nimtzu, Shnaim HaRishonim Krovim Opsulim, and we find the first two are Krovim Opsulim. So you see the word HaRishonim. That word does not appear in our Gemara. That is in the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel, as well as the Tosefta and Gitin. That might be the key element that changes the things over here. It might have implications halacha, which is, when you have Rishonim, then it becomes obvious that these Edim were put in there to fill in the space in between. And that's what the difference will be between the case of Makot and the case over here. In the case of Makot, the aid who testifies as a Krova Pasul can be interspersed amongst the Edim in any order. It's nothing particular about him that he's being placed into the testimony. He's just testifying and he's problematic. Since he's problematic, he's going to ruin the Edut of everybody else that's there. On the other hand, by a Shtar, if the Edim Psulim or Krovim are found as the first signatures on the document, it's clear that they were given to sign over there because of a Kavod. It was an honor for them to sign there. They gave them to sign first, not because they were coming to testify about the content of the shtar, but rather they're simply either to fill in the space or to give them a kavod to sign first on the document. That's what the Rashbam brings down from Yehuda Gaon. Nami mukla lachad techizkia bihilchot edut shelo kagon dava karov chatim bereisha. Only if the karov is signed first on the document. In order that it's not a problem for Rav Nachman and Masechet Makot, where he says if anybody is a pasul or karov, the edut falls away. When the karov is signed first on the document, muchacha milta to the kavod of it. And that, for that reason, it's done for kavod. It's clear they're not there to testify. Even Rav Nachman will agree in that case that the shtar is kasher. So here you have the girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel, and you also have this Rabbi Yehuda Gaon, who both say that the only time that this din is applicable is when the Edim Psulim are the first Edim that are signed on the document, because that makes it clear that they were given an honor to sign first, or makes it clear they did not come to sign to testify, but simply to fill in space or for a kavod, and that's why the document is kasher. So then, the Baalei Tosafot quote the Rabbeinu Chananel, and then we have at the top of Kuf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph the Rabbeinu Tam. Ve'ein nira the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with this and says it's irrelevant where the psulim or the krovim are found in the document. The document is kasher, and the word Rishonim, he says, even if you have the girsa of Rishonim, says Rishonim the garis Rabbeinu Chananel lav dafka. It's lav dafka el kol shekeinu. Why? It's the other way around. You would expect that the first Edim that are signed on the shtar are the ones that validate the shtar. So you would expect that they would put the kosher Edim first, and then you put the psulim afterwards to give them a kavod. The fact that the Edim psulim are first is a chiddush that you would say there that it's kosher. And that's what he says is meant by the Tosef. The Tosef is not coming to say only if they're first. It's saying even if they are first, it's still kosher. So v'im tomar, im kein amai kosher, says, then why don't we worry about kiyum shtarot in general, where you're going to get mixed up between cases where krovim sign and then you're going to say it's valid, and case where krovim sign and you're going to say it's invalid. If you now say that a shtar is valid with krovim sign on it, people are not going to know that there were extra edim on this one, or ksherim on this one. That's why we don't want people or krovim signing on these things. V'yesh lamar, says there's a big difference between a get and a shtar. By a get, the edim that sign on the get must be present and must both be there at the same time that they sign. The problem is now, that means that all the edim were present when the krovim signed on the get. So now the edim sign on the get, they're krovim, and then the other kosher edim right afterwards. What are people going to say? They were all there at the same time. And despite the fact that you had Edim Kshirim and Edim Psulim, they let the Psulim go first. What's that going to indicate? Edim Krovim or Psulim are fine to sign in a get. No problem whatsoever. By a shtar, on the other hand, a shtar does not require that the Edim be there. So what the guy did was he left space. He signed down, leaving space for the other aide to come and sign. Then instead, a Karov comes in and fills in the space. So nobody's going to conclude from that Krovim or Psulim or Ksherim. They're just going to say that he wasn't there when the Karov and Pasul, they weren't there at the same time. And so they gave the honor to Krovim at one point, or he left a blank space. There are reasons to say why the Krovim were signed on this document, not because of the fact that Krovim or Psulim are kasher by such a shtar. For that reason, the Baal Tosfot would say over here, we have a difference between a get, where you cannot have Krovim or Psulim sign on it, but it's a regular shtar where you can have Krovim and Psulim sign on it. If that's the case, then why is it kosher when the Krovim are found at the end of the document? Because imkain kasherim psulim besof b'makom kiyum hashtar yomrum karov pasul kosher. V'chazer bo Rabbeinu Tam. For that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam backed away from his position. Says in the end, he only allowed you to have the Edim Krovim or Psulim at the beginning of the shtar, not in the end, because in the end, we are Mekayim the shtar with the last Edim that are found there. Now, if the last Edim are Krovim and Psulim, and the Rabbeinu Tam says it's Kasher, people are going to think that Krovim and Psulim are Kasherim, even though we're really being Mekayim with the Edim that came before. So in the end, the Rabbeinu Tam backs away from his position about allowing Krovim and Psulim to be anywhere in the document. But nevertheless, he does introduce the possibility, and we do find from Rav Haigon that he disagrees with Rav Yehudai Gon. And Rav Haigon says that you can't have the Edim Kervim Psulim anywhere in the order of the Edim that are signed, although he does say that if they are done in alternating manner, that he doesn't like it. If they have an Eid Kasher, Eid Pasul, Eid Kasher, Eid Pasul, they already says it's problematic and we won't accept it. The Ramban, this is an amazing Ramban, because the Ramban disagrees logically with that. He said that doesn't matter, it shouldn't matter at all. Even if they are alternating between kasher and pasul, it should be a kosher document. But, and this is really the Ramban, or the essence of the Ramban, he says, I'm bound by the psak of Rav Haigon, and I'm unwilling to undermine the psak of Rav Haigon. He was bound by the Mesorah, and therefore he says, even though I think logically it's not true and it's not right, I'm going to defer to Rav Haigon, and therefore if they're alternating Edim, we will not consider it to be kasher. On the other hand, if you have Edim Psulim at the end, in the middle, or in the beginning, according to Rav Hai, according to the Ramban, like the first view of the Rabbeinu Tam, they think that it's kosher and it's not problematic, and a shtar would be fine in that way. Obviously, you can see from the Ri that we're trying not to do this because of the problems that arise, or the risks that arise from this, that people are going to think that Krovim and Psulim are considered to be Ksherim with regards to signatories of Gittin or Shtarot. Now the Gemara says, Ibailuhu. Shnei shitim shamru, hein v'aviran. There's two rows that are left over that are problematic. Is it them plus the space? I mean that every row requires the font size plus an empty space between, the spacing between the lines. Odilma hein v'lo aviran. Or maybe it just means the amount of space to write, but not the empty margin spaces that you would have in between. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak mistavra da hein v'aviran. Logically, you would argue that it should be the font plus the empty space. If you say that it's the font space without the empty space or the gapping between the lines, if you have one line without any empty space, what is it useful for? So it's clear from here that when we're talking about leaving over spaces here, whether it's one line or two lines, we're talking about the font size plus the blank space that would allow it to be in the next line. We're not trying to have it where you have the font size and you would have to press it right up against the other ktav, or you have to shrink the font to leave empty space between them. That's not what we're speaking about. Here we're speaking about that the one line or the two lines is what we would have in a normal lined paper, which is that you have the line which allows for the writing of the letters and the space that makes it a second line or a different line afterwards. In general, we would assume that people are going to match the font size and the gapping between them, and that's what we're talking about here. The leftover line or two lines is going to match that which was done previously in the document. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Kusamath Gimel, Amud Aleph.